And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to understand. Restore the Republic. We're losing our freedom in the land. Behind the scenes, controlling everything, from the daily news we read to the politicians. And they're pulling our financial strings, more powerful than kings. It's the central bank elite bringing our destruction. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to make a stand. Restore the Republic. We are the people and we can. Restore the Republic. Pledge our allegiance to the flag. Restore the Republic. We gotta take our freedom back. America arises, it's time to open up our eyes and march back down the road to freedom. If we look the other way, they'll take our rights away. So we the people must take freedom.
Come on, let's get it. Come on. Lay down on the couch. Lay down.
Printing money till we choke. Shoving taxes down our throats. Bailing out banks we don't even owe, it's a ruination. They're invading our privacy with high technology. Microchip in our ID, it's abomination. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to make a stand. Restore the Republic. Spread the news across the land. Restore the Republic.
And that requires every single person on this call to stand up and recognize that the Republic has already been reestablished. Welcome to the Republic for the United States of America. You may call me Kelby. I am an American. Today is August the 14th of 2014. This call is held weekly, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the people of the United States of America Corporation, its employees, law enforcement, 14th Amendment citizens, and men and women of our armed services. The Republic government, not a movement, called the Republic for the United States of America, has been reseated. We are law-abiding, peaceful Americans. We are pro-government. You can consider it that we're simply anti-corruption. We are fathers, mothers, sons, and daughters. We have families just like you. We simply found some truths out, and now we're sharing these important truths with the rest of the world. So get ready to hear things that sound impossible. Get ready to understand that you, too, could be a part of history. We welcome each one of you to the Republic for the United States of America. Tonight we have a very special guest that Bob is going to be introducing in just a minute. What I'd like to do is ask our Vice President to please open us up in prayer. Well, he's not speaking up, so I'm going to do it for him. Father God, we want to thank you for the opportunity to just have this Republic Nation re-inhabited. We ask that you bless the call and you bless the guest and you bless the host, Bob, so that we can get a clear understanding of what's being given. This information is very important, Lord, and we seek you and your guidance and your counsel in all that we do, and we pray in your Son's name. Amen. Bob, I yield the floor.
Well, good evening, everybody. I'm really excited about this call tonight. I'll tell you what happened. Roger Dowdell is a businessman that was in retirement. He came out of retirement. I'll let him tell you about that. But we're lucky to have this experienced businessman conducting the kind of return that he's conducting. He happens to be currently in Florida working with the third of his major organizations that he's been working at. And this one is the Liberty Alliance, and it's regarding establishment of our original common law grand juries. Now, we've had calls about this before, and we've discussed standing up counties and how that's been going across the nation. And they've got some really exciting news for you tonight. But I wanted to tell you the whole story. And to get ready for this call, I watched a YouTube that he had out on a discussion he had with a Tea Party. And Roger, that was a really good briefing, and I'd appreciate it if you'd take it now. And I also have Terry Trussell on the phone, and the two of them have some really, really good news about what they did today. And Roger, I yield to you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me. Overall, I'd like to mention that we really appreciate your support, your organization's support. And you're right, today was a big day in the history of NLA and the history of the country. Terry will fill you in a little bit later, but in essence, for the first time in the recent history of the country, we seated a people's grand jury, and we called it the People's Grand Jury of Dixie County, Florida. And it was a successful day. The grand jury operated as the grand jury historically is supposed to operate. And we're really proud of the team that pulled it together. And we're particularly proud of the courageous, patriotic people of Dixie County, Florida, who stepped up and did the right thing for their county and for the country. Terry, any comments on that?
Well, I'll tell you, Roger, it's always a pleasure to hear from you again. The help you put into this thing today, and actually for the past several months, the effort that we've all put into this to bring it to this level is it's overwhelming. We went in today. Of course, we can't talk about the workings of the grand jury because they're secret, and for good reason. It's quite understandable that the principles that have stood well for us for over, what is it now, 800 years, that these things work. They've been proven to work for the people for so long. And now we're coming to the realization that we've been separated from the grand jury process for over 100 years in this country. And that's by design. It's not just our benign neglect. There has been forces afoot that have been working to subvert the common law grand jury and the common law and the grand jury system, I might add. And that's why we put this together, was to bring it back to the people, to serve the people, to show the people that they have the power to put their will out there over the people that work for them. This insanity that we've allowed ourselves to fall into is exasperating in one degree, and it's shocking in another degree. But when you realize how many people have been in control of our education system, they've been in control of our legal system, our judiciary, our executives, everything, it's just, we have got to push back. We've got to take this back, and we've got to control it ourselves. And Roger has just been an incredible force in getting this done. He's been working with us a lot longer than I have. He's been working with it for years. I've only been involved with it, I guess, for the past 6 months.
And I'm just amazed at what he has helped me accomplish in this. And I'm gratified that I had the opportunity to work with him in it. Roger?
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate the support. One of the things I thought it would be very important to cover for the listeners is a bit of the history and the functioning of the common law grand jury, because if most people are like me, as of August of 2013, I didn't have a clue what was a common law grand jury in the history and what was its function. And it turns out it was developed back in 1215 AD as part of the Magna Carta. Article 61 of the Magna Carta mentions 25 barons, which today would translate into 25 of we the people. And it had three primary functions as it developed. The first function was to protect common people from unjust charges from those in power. And today we know that there's a lot of prosecutorial overreach that ends up in causing people to, number one, not benefit from their Fifth and Seventh Amendment rights, but number two, to actually cause them to need relief from the fact that they're not getting their Fifth Amendment and Seventh Amendment rights. In addition, the second function is to develop upon its own effort and investigation, as well as from evidence donated by we the people, to make sure that the right wrongdoers and the right evildoers are standing trial. And the third and possibly most important function of the common law grand jury, as it was historically, has both the right and the responsibility to reach into both elected and unelected government and root out corruption. And the definition of corruption includes anything that is repugnant to our Constitution. So as an example, we did dig up in the archives in Manatee County, Florida, a newspaper clipping that talked about the grand jury operation in 1901. Yep. And what it showed was that this group of 25 we the people did a complete soup to nuts, top to bottom audit of the books and records of the county and the operation of the county. They actually went out into the operation of the county and audited things like the judicial system and the jails, etc. And then they would write their once every 6 months, they write a report that would indicate the defects they found and the deficits and demand corrective action out of the county commissioners. So if they found any kind of operational defect or bookkeeping defect or overspending, they could write this up into their presentment, which would then get published in the paper, and or, of course, they would always take care of the criminal activity with either a presentment or indictment. But in 1946, the progressives that are in both parties decided that they didn't like the idea of we the people having the audit capability. And when I say audit, I mean literally anyone from this grand jury, and especially the investigators that work for it, could walk into any piece of the government at any time of day and say, look, I'd like to audit this function. And I'd like to see the books and records on this issue. And the government employees would have to cooperate or they would be held responsible. So they basically said they don't like that, so they wrote a footnote in Rule 6 of the U.S. Criminal Code of Criminal Procedure, calling the presentment obsolete. But that literally is meaningless because the presentment is included in the amendments to the Constitution. So fortunately, in 1992, Justice Antonin Scalia, in a very important decision, U.S. versus Williams, wrote up the history of the grand jury and gave us a roadmap for what it can do. And in essence, it is an independent part of government because it's not in one of the first three articles. It's not part of the legislative, executive, or judicial branches. Instead, it is a constitutional fixture on its own, owned by we the people for the benefit of we the people. In other words, it's a audit arm that we have as a capability to keep our government centered under the Constitution, and in particular, keep our political operatives, both elected and unelected, accountable to their oath of office. And that's something that's been missing for quite a while. The latest, last actual evidence we have of operation was 1956. And since then, we haven't had any real operational control and to witness the out-of-control relative to our Constitution, the out-of-control behavior by both elected and unelected players. Bob, any comments or questions?
Yes, I particularly was interested when I reviewed this. We've had, as I said, prior calls regarding this process, and it's, in fact, our justice, on our website, we have a published white paper, if you will, acknowledging the presence of it, and it's a very hard thing for people to get their arms around until they realize they've got to think as old as I am, because since the black and white pictures of that were made in the 30s and 40s, you don't see any of these things, because as you say, they disappeared, and I'm really pleased to see you point this out. I didn't know it was 1956, but that's a long time ago. Are you?
Yes, it's important to understand that that's the last time there's any evidence of them actually operating. But fundamentally, again, because it's embedded in the Constitution, you'd actually have to amend the Constitution to eliminate it. So in essence, we the people fell asleep. It was a primary tool our founders gave us to keep the government centered under the Constitution. And, of course, the progressives were not very happy about that, because they, if we kept the government under the Constitution, they could not dictate how we were to live our lives. And that was very frustrating to them. So there's been a long-term, very deep, very broad conspiracy that ultimately has hurt the country, in my view, pretty deeply. But all 49, so far, 49 out of the 50 states are active in standing up their common law grand juries. In Dixie County, we renamed it locally as the People's Grand Jury of Dixie County. And fundamentally, it operates under common law. There are two principles, fundamental principles of common law. One is, for every injury, there must be a remedy. The second is, for there to be a crime, there must be a victim, and the state cannot be the victim. In addition, there are three values: justice, honor, and mercy. So when you think of common law, we are a common law nation. Florida, in this example, is a common law state. In fact, all the states are common law except Louisiana, due to its French founding. And the net result is that when I woke up to this, I realized that, in essence, the lawyers and the judges have ripped off the people by taking away our common law system and pulling it out of our education process. In fact, they don't even teach it in school, let alone in law school. And yet common law is so simple and so straightforward, because unless you injure somebody or you damage their property, or steal their property, that's one of those two things, there's no crime. And yet about 80% of the people in our jails and prisons today are there with no victims. So ultimately, our society is paying a very deep penalty, and the people that are getting rich from it are those that are running the judicial system. If you looked at the percentage of our GDP that has gone towards the judicial system in the last 50 years. It's a dramatic increase. Terry, any comments?
Well, I tell you, I'm kind of following what you're saying there with this, and I agree. And I think that probably one of the things that might interest some people is the amount of detail and depth that Roger and myself and one of our other key players in this, a man named Hagan Smith, have put into this thing, is that we're looking at the structure, getting down into the minutiae of how our people's grand jury concept is actually going to work, other than the interface with the prosecutors and the sheriffs and the courts and so forth, but getting down to the points where we're going to have a body of people that are going to be constantly moving in and out of our grand jury system. And the purpose of this is to avoid establishing a stagnant bureaucracy, which is a great danger in any kind of an entity of this nature. And by bringing people in and out, by educating people and training them in the principles and the precepts of the common law jury concept, a grand jury concept, we will be able to keep it fresh, we'll be able to keep it transparent, and keep it from, like I said, turning into a stagnant bureaucracy where people are looking for the best way to feather their own nests. This is a huge mistake we've made in our own government. And the beauty of this is that by taking this element and injecting it between the people and government, not as a barrier, but as a channel, we can keep the rest of our government from being the stagnant bureaucracy that it has become. And if we can keep this stirred up, I think we're going to have an opportunity to turn this country completely around in so many ways, and we can do it quickly. Our plan is to establish or footprint what we've done here in every other county in the state, and then do everything we can to spread it throughout the country. This can be done quickly. A lot of people will think that this will have to take a long period of time to grow out. But there are people already that left Dixie County today, have gone back to their county, and they have committed to within 24 hours to pull the people together that are already polarized and activated to make this change, form their own county grand juries, and we're moving forward. We will have probably 3 to 4 in the next week already set up and ready to go into their courts. We're going to work with them and make sure everything happens the way it did here. And every time we make one more step with this, the steps get easier. So we're excited about that side of the plan. And Roger, what you got?
Roger, let me interject another issue here real quick. While he's on the Dixie County activity, they provided you court space, and did they provide you costs, or how did that work?
Well, we were very lucky in the case of Dixie County that Terry was chosen as the grand jury foreman for the statutory grand jury. And from that, as a foundation, we gained court access for the people's grand jury. But it happened because the state attorney interfered with the process pretty dramatically. And the issues there are criminal in nature and are in the public record. But fundamentally, it was a unique opportunity that we had. Yep, just a minute. Okay, you can be quiet. And one of the other things I'd like to mention, though, is that our founders warned us very clearly, never let all three branches of the government be in the same hands. What has happened? Well, if you take a look at the legislative, judicial, and the executive branch, we've got lawyers pretty much in control of all three branches. In addition, almost all lawyers, but not necessarily every lawyer, has dual oaths. As a government office holder, they'll have an oath to the U.S. Constitution, but as a lawyer, they'll have an oath to the bar. And that means they actually are conflicted. In fact, listener, if they want to do a little Google search on the missing 13th Amendment, and to my shock and disbelief, in 1809, initially, Congress tried to pass the what's called now the original 13th Amendment. It failed, did pass in 1810, and it was fully ratified by 1819. So if you get any authentic constitution between, say, 1820 and 1860, you'll see a very different 13th Amendment in it than the one you see today. And the history on that, just briefly, is the fact that when we stood up the Republic, the remaining monarchies in Europe knew that they were toast if this experiment worked. The Constitution in 1789 was just such a radical departure from what they're used to. They knew that if it caught on and we were successful, then their monarchies would end pretty quickly. So they began sending agents over to undermine the Republic. And most of those agents were in the form of bankers and lawyers. So Congress knew this was going on. They figured it out, and they passed the original 13th Amendment, which basically says that if you have a title after your name like Esquire, like lawyers do, then if you run for office, you lose your citizenship. So let me say that again. If you were a lawyer and you run for office, you would lose your citizenship. That actually became part of our Constitution, and it actually remains a valid amendment. It was totally passed and approved by the states and printed in many, many different states. Even in Colorado's archives, it's printed. Even though Colorado wasn't a state, they were trying to train their people to for statehood, and they printed 5,000 to 10,000 of these constitutions with the original 13th Amendment in it. But it just shows you how our founders understood that this was going to be a problem, and how the conspiracy existed to actually, at the end of the Civil War, rip it out of the Constitution and replace it with today's 13th Amendment.
Now, Roger, you've also you've been active. Tell us what happened. What caused you to come out of retirement? And you've been actually you got involved in Freedom Works, Tea Parties, and now this has become your major current thrust. And can you just give the people an idea of why? Because the people on this phone are a lot like us. None of them are paid to work with the Republic to move it forward. It's not an organization. We don't have dues. We don't, pay. We're just here to put it together so that it's re-inhabited in place, and when we get enough body of the people, i.e., all these counties all over the country, then we can have our republic back because they won't be able to run their corporation. So it's kind of important in what I saw for you to explain. You were retired, taking it easy, right? What caused you to do this?
So the story is really pretty interesting to me, at least. But it was fun. I was having a good time and retired in 06. And the election of November 08, I turned to my wife and said, this is not going to end well. We're going to have to get involved. So from that point of view, I started doing some research for an organization that we could participate in and support. And I found Freedom Works, some background research. I went up to D.C. and interviewed the team, and really they were intent on having a positive impact on the political level of the problem. And they got themselves organized and grew, and I helped them build some of their planning processes and things like that. But fundamentally, in 2010, we had a pretty good result where we took back the House, and that was encouraging. But I decided before 2010 that I also needed to understand the full system, so I joined Tea Party Manatee, Manatee, Florida, Manatee County, Florida. And by the time we got to the 2012 election, they had asked me to join the board and be responsible for research. And after the 2012 election, and also one other key element that struck me as odd, when Chief Justice John Roberts said that Obamacare was constitutional, when that happened, it was like a 2x4 the side of the head for me, because I realized that, you know, any sixth grader could read the Constitution and understand the federal government has no role whatsoever in medical care. And yet now we're turning over most of the system to the feds. And besides the fact that it's going to get ruined and wasteful, it's just out of bounds. So how could the Supreme Court Justice of the United States say it's fully constitutional when any sixth grader reading it would know it isn't? That struck me as, wow, so how can we ever get the government recentered under the Constitution if the judiciary, which is, to my knowledge at the time, the real check and balance on the other two branches regarding protecting the Constitution, they really have given up. They've been taken over and given up. So that started me thinking that operating at the political level wasn't necessarily addressing the root cause of our problem. And being a business guy, it's all about root cause and corrective action to beat the competition. So the second thing that happened was then the effort to understand how else, what progressives want us to understand that the only way you can fix the government is at the ballot box. And I was certainly a big believer and been trained that way and observed that that's the only thing going on in the country. So, you know, I guess that's true. But after the 2012 elections, Tea Party Manatee, we got pretty discouraged with the results. Given the amount of time and effort and money that went in, we got pretty bad ROI. So they asked me to take a look at the strategy, and we did a quick analysis. What kind of game are we in? Well, it's pretty simple. The progressives on both sides of the aisle are launching a continuous stream of unconstitutional initiatives meant to divide and conquer the opposition. And sure enough, it's working well, because if you go into any Tea Party today or any 9-12 group, certain people want to defend gun rights, other people want to get Common Core out of the schools, other people want to defend property rights against Agenda 21 and regionalism. So it's working, and we're punching way under our weight. Then we asked ourselves a basic question. Is there one simple goal that if we all got in the boat and rowed together, even if it took us multiple years, that if we accomplished that goal, we could solve almost all these problems rather than fighting on a lot of different fronts? That analysis came up with the answer, yes, it's really pretty simple. We just need to restore our Constitution. We don't need a new one, because this one's been proven to work really well when it's applied. But now we're in a period of time where it's not being applied, and we're having a lot of problems. So we then did the analysis and said, okay, if we could restore our Constitution, would it solve most of the problems? The answer turned out to be yes. Then we did a survey across the nation to try to find organizations that were working towards that goal and assess and analyze, did they have any real chance of success? And we found a small group of folks up in New York, led by John Durash and Gerard Apria, called National Liberty Alliance. And they had been bouncing in and out of court for about 5 or 6 years on different issues, including mortgage foreclosures and things. And they had figured out that we had actually have two different, completely different legal systems. One is the common law system, the other is statutory law. And they also figured out the statutes don't apply to we the people unless we voluntarily accept them to apply to us. In other words, it gets back to the key definition of American exceptionalism. America is the only country before 1776 and after 1776, where we the people are the highest ranking sovereign in the system, and Below we the people is ranked the states. Below the states is the general government that the founders called the general government. We call it the federal government. That compares to Germany, France, Switzerland, where the highest ranking sovereign in the system is the state. And it's a very different animal. So, in essence, they figured out if you use the right language and the right approach, you could keep the court operating in the common law domain, which resulted in a much better result for we the people. So in August of 2013, I listened to some of their conference calls and said, wow, if this is true, it really means our whole judicial system has been hijacked. How am I going to figure it out if this really is the case? So I took everything that these folks were talking about, and I actually dug in all the way back to the original documentation, including the Magna Carta, Article 61, et cetera. And by golly, everything they were saying was validated by my own direct research with the original documentation. So we started down this path, and luckily for the organization, we've attracted a number of good people like Terry and Hagen Smith. And in Florida, we're one of the leading states. In fact, I'd have to say we are the leading state as of today in the nation. But again, all 49 states are working towards standing up their grand juries. And but right now, Dixie County is really in the lead in the whole country. Over to you, Terry. Terry? Bob?
Let me go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was muted. I apologize. I had put the mute on so you couldn't hear me typing. The exciting thing to me is that we've been working with these people on the ground. The group that was here today were so energized, so animated to get this thing moving. I don't know. It's very difficult when you've got that kind of energy flowing around you to just sit by and let nothing happen. That's infectious. And that's the direction that I've been thinking on this whole thing. In fact, I was sitting here doing some writing on where we're going tomorrow. And it's very difficult even to go to sleep when you've got all of these things buzzing through your head and how you can get this, keep this momentum and build on it. So that's really the area that I've been looking at. I've gotten my email boxes full this afternoon with people wanting more information on how to go about doing this. I think we've got something rolling here that's going to be a major force in change for this country. And as people become more cognizant of the power that they hold in their own hands. I've been involved, and Bob, you know a great deal about what I've been involved with over the last 5-6 years, all the way going back to the first 9/12 and 09 event in Washington, D.C., and being there with 2.5 million people, seeing the entire mall just full of beautiful faces and smiles, and really thinking that, man, we can just, if they can just look out their windows and see how much we want this thing to turn the other way, they'll do it. And it has been constant, I don't know, distraction, deflection, and so forth that we've run into since then. And there are so many forces that are working against us. And trying to do this on the national level has been such a frustration to me, because there's all these people that are nodding their heads and saying yes, 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 and they are voting no, no, no. And this is a way we can take that away from them and put it in our own hands. We now have our destinies under our control, and that's where it needs to be. We, on the ground, in the grassroots, are the force that they're going to have to reckon with. We are not going to be denied in this. We have very little time, and that's the point that I really see right now, is the sense of urgency that we have to make this thing come alive and move through the country as fast as possible. Speed is of the essence.
Well, Bob? You know, I have a comment here. This is Bob. Recognizing that is really, I think, the most important part. because I'm sure Roger's findings will fall into place. I'm going to try and frame them just for a minute. See, freedom works national, general level. Tea parties, independent. A lot of them have the same name, but they're independent of each other. And then juries. Now, what you really look at, if you think about it, is in the 1860s, when all this stuff went south, literally the South left, then what we have today are two totally different things. We had republic, and today it's corporation. Well, you look at people and say corporation, they shake their head, and you can hear it rattle. I mean, they just don't know. We never learned it that way. But what happens is we get people like the two of you, and we see the energy, but it's not only the energy, because we got a lot of other people with energy, and we got a lot of other people like you two. But what we did in the Republic, which is everybody, what we did in the Republic in 2010 is reseated the empty seats that were left when the corporation stole control of the country from us. Now, this reality landed, and the reason I'm bringing all this up, because this reality landed on Terry about 4 months ago when he and I first talked. Maybe it's five now. And he said, you know, I'm a computer guy. He said, I thought I could just put together this organization, and we'd start filling it up. And I said, Terry, you're too late. It's already here. He said, what do you mean? I said, just go to our website. It's here. We did it. Done. It's in 2000. We've actually reseated, re-inhabited the original Republic for the whole of the people. Now, the whole of the people are all in counties. So everyone in those counties have to get involved in the grassroots, and they have to get involved in the states, because the states, in the original intent, is where the governance takes place. Very little rises to the general level in the Constitution. And it's really restricted in Article 1, Section 8, which they slaughter every day, the 535 of them. But they went to the two-party system. And we talk about third parties. And the reality is, between the corporation and the parties, even when you do elect someone, Roger, like you were discussing, and that's what set me off here, all that work to elect someone, and whoever it is gets there, they're stuffed in a corner and told, you came from the Tea Party, you don't count. You're not true to the party, so you're not going to play on any significant committee, and you'll never get a chairmanship. And little by little, they break them down or they push them out. So we're really controlled by this systematic disaster called parties, on top of the fact we're controlled by presidential kingdom, and the Congress doesn't have a whole lot to say anyway. Can you address that, Roger? Because what I just said is brand new to you about the Republic, but I did want to sneak it in for our own purposes.
Sure, Bob. One of the key things to understand here is that we've got to ask ourselves, what's the system design that the founders gave us versus what system are we operating in today? And certainly the corporations is a big change that the founders did not include the original design. But one of the key elements that was included was the common law grand jury. So what is really incredibly hard to understand initially is because we're the highest ranking sovereigns, we the people, when we come together in a group of 25 and we take a decision, not even the U.S. Supreme Court can review that decision. Okay, so not even the U.S. Supreme Court can review that decision. So what that implies is that if we stand up in our 3,142 counties spread out across the country, if we stand up our common law grand juries in all of those counties, we can hold our local political office holders and unelected officials accountable to their oath of office to the Constitution. And if they violate that oath, they're acting in their private capacity and they are actionable in their private capacity, meaning that their skin is on the line, their assets are at risk. If an action were to be taken, they could lose their assets. So that's a great way to keep people really focused on the content of their oath to support and defend the U.S. Constitution. In addition, we stand up the statewide grand jury, and we can attack the unconstitutional behavior that's going on in the statehouse. But furthermore, down the line, as we build up more support in the public's mind and we get more experience, we'll be able to call in our national players, the ones that go to Washington. In the case of Florida, it'd be Senator Nelson, Senator Rubio. In Manatee County, it's Vern Buchanan, our representative to the House. And we'd invite them into the grand jury room, and we'd say, gentlemen, from this day forward, we're going to hold you accountable to this little book called the U.S. Constitution. Do you understand what that means? And they'd probably say, no, tell us, what does that mean? And we would say, well, quite simply, that the founders in Article 1, Section 8 gave the general government 20 enumerated powers. And if you vote for any bill going forward whose scope is broader than those powers, we will hold you accountable because that's a breach of your oath to the Constitution. And in addition, you're free to raise as much money as you want from your constituents for your campaigns. But if you take any money from outside of your constituents, we're going to be forced to hold you accountable with a presentment because that's bribery, plain and simple. So ultimately, we see this, although it is a vehicle starting in a local level, and again, we've got 49 out of the 50 states working actively. One more state will be up and running in about 2 weeks, and then we'll be focused more and more on each individual county. But as we do this locally, we believe we have a reasonably good probability of recentering local, state, and federal government under the Constitution, and particularly taking out the unconstitutional pieces that have been added, like the regional pieces that have been added here in Florida. There's three or four different regional organizations that are meant to undermine the constitutionally specified government structure. So we're actually pretty encouraged that we're aiming at the right root cause, that the main defect in the system is in the judicial branch, not having anything to do with elected office. And do we really care if the elected office holder is Republican or Democrat if we hold them accountable to their oath of office to the Constitution? Because after all, if agreed upon in the Constitution is that every state, as it entered the Union, agreed that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Well, if it's the supreme law of the land, all we have to do is enforce it. We really don't need a new one. We don't need to do a lot of other work. We've got to figure out a way to hold them accountable to their oath of office. And that's what this allows us to do.
That's extremely well said. I'm pleased the way you said that. It's very concise. Hold responsible at that level, no R's and D's, because without the R's and D's being able to coordinate them into the corporation, we'd find a whole new day just in what these people would act like, not being answerable to the party boss instead of the people in their district, whether senator or representative.
Bob, let's face it. As soon as you turn the government entities into corporations, does it surprise you you get profit-seeking corporations that are more interested in building their business, building their revenues, building their profits, than doing the right thing for the country? Doesn't that explain a lot of the behavior that you're seeing? And certainly that both parties?
Absolutely does to me. That party comes first. Once they're there, that party comes first.
And even the party comes first, but even take the judicial system. The revenue-generating agents for the corporation typically are the police and the judges. And what do they care about? Do they care about justice or do they care about revenue? In fact, there's a recent DVD put out by a doctor funded it out in the West Coast called Divorce Corp, C-O-R-P. And even though most of the states have installed, if not all the states have installed, a no-fault divorce system, the lawyers and the judges have figured out a way to turn divorce into a $50 billion a year high-margin revenue stream business. And instead of trying to help families and repair the gaps, they find they can optimize revenues by accelerating the gaps and amplifying the gaps. So it's really a very destructive thing for the country and our society, but it generates a lot of money and a lot of profits.
And none of that goes to the people, and none of that helps reduce taxes, right?
Well, it depends. Some of it goes to the people as they are lawyers, and they do
well,
they
why not
get revenue.
Including them?
Okay.
I told my corporate attorney once, I said, what I've got as a solution for this, because I couldn't collect the debt my corporation was trying to pick back up. And I said, I got a solution for this. I said, I want to go back to duels. And I said, you're my man. And I said, I'm going to come out exactly the same whether you lose or the other guy, because we'll reduce the lawyers by 50% every time.
But fundamentally, there's another big motivation here, that how can we consider ourselves free when today, if you graduated, say, from high school and you wanted to become a law-abiding, useful citizen, and you decided, well, what I'm going to do is read the laws I'm obligated to follow and the statutes I'm obligated to understand, there's over 64 feet of shelf space of books, of laws and statutes that anyone has to read. Now, what that means is we don't have freedom anymore. We have what's called selective prosecution, meaning that if at any time you offend purposely or accidentally any political official, more than likely they can dig into some arcane, unknown law or statute and figure out something that you're doing wrong. This is absurd. Furthermore, they've had a long-term incentive to dumb us down. For example, if you go to the NLA website, you'll see a test eighth graders in 1895 had to pass to graduate from eighth grade. So it took 8 years of school. Today, if you add a year or two before first grade, and you add 4 years after eighth grade, right? So you're now up to 14 years. Our kids cannot pass that eighth grade test. In fact, with common law, the eighth graders in 1895, right out of eighth grade, could go into court and defend themselves or go into court and become the plaintiff if they were damaged. And that's the way our founders designed the judicial system. And yet today, of course, if you attempt to do that, you get blown away, not only because of the complexity, but the very fact that the courts, for the most part, are not being run on common law unless you're knowledgeable enough to refuse the Nisi Prius court's statute jurisdiction, and you say to the judge that, I don't know what jurisdiction you're in, but, Your Honor, I'm in a common law court of record. And you must insist that you stay in that court of record, common law court of record, in order to benefit from the common laws. But if instead you slip up in any which way, they use all kinds of word magic to pull you into their jurisdiction, and then you're screwed.
Well, by and large, it's my belief that not one in 100 people can successfully accomplish that given their knowledge today. And
I agree. It may not even be that good.
For that reason, we've actually re-inhabited, as I said, all three branches. We're holding the seats here so they can be refilled, because the one chink in the armor coming up from the counties as the people is going to be taking your true bill and getting it effectively prosecuted, because you've got to train the sheriff, you've got to train the court. Now, how are you going to train a commercial court to act in common law? So we think in the Republic at that point in time is maybe the tipping point. We have to have the courts renewed. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we're, again, operating under common law with the values of justice, honor, and mercy. We are definitely going to move the judicial system back towards common law. And if the people running the system oblige and are interested in working that way, we're happy that they would change. But we are going to insist. We were founded as a common law nation. Sorry. And the states have been founded as common law states. And that's our heritage. That's our birthright. That's the fundamental issues in front of the country. For example, the Declaration is a common law document. The Constitution is a common law document. And we're going to head in that direction and hope that people will see the light, and certainly hope that we, the people, will join us in such numbers that we will find enough public support that the elected political officials and the unelected government officials in the judiciary will pay attention and move over to common law.
Well, obviously that needs to be what happens for us ever to get back our organic Republic and Constitution in full operation.
Right.
What are your thoughts? Well, it's an unfair question. I should give you a chance to we're getting close to time here. I should give you a chance to dive into our website a little bit. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised, because I kind of had you here on the fly, because when I found out what you were doing and what kind of background you had, I thought, wow, I can't pass that up. But I've been unfair to you because I didn't ask you to visit the website first to know what we've done that welcomes not only the efforts that are being made in National Liberty Alliance, but the 2,000 plus groups out there that all are trying to get to the same thing. And, you know, we've got a playing field that accepts it all. It's there for all. What people need to understand is the Republic isn't, like I said, it's not an organization, not a club, it's not a party, it's just the people. It's
right.
The plain It's the board. It's the game board that is the republic, and it's here.
But have you been able to make any progress against the corporate entities?
Well, I believe we have. I consider progress that we're all still here operating.
Okay, but can you give me the example where you've...
Pardon me?
Can you give me an example where you've helped move the government back under the Constitution?
Well, we consider, and I have to be careful here because our documents are a key, and that's why I asked you to look at the website. The actual progress since 2010 is in moving through the process of educating the people that are working in the seats. A lot of our people that have held seats here to get that progressively better are involved in the grand juries in the states. In fact, Colorado has a county that's doing almost exactly what you guys did today, and they're either done or almost done. And and that was driven in one county as well, but all the other counties are watching it. What we've done is identified a way to educate republic, because most of the activities we've worked in is that's the first step. And if we can have people understand what you so eloquently discussed about what you would tell serving politicians about who elected them and where the money came from and who's their boss, if people could just understand that, and if they learn about the corporation, that's our job. Our job is to have it here to refill the seats and move out the corporation over time, and we do that with the same thing you do counties with, the force of the people.
Point of order, Bob, it's 7:02.
Pacific.
Pacific, thank you.
Bob, it sounds like we have some common goals, and hopefully we can really cooperate and help organizations succeed together. And we really appreciate what you folks are doing. But we are really focused on this 100% and making some good momentum. And we think, ultimately, all of the parties joining together will have a serious impact in the right direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All running parallel for the same goal.
Right. And, you know, we define our goal is to get the government back under the Constitution. The constraints of Article 1, Section 8 are the critical ones. And we're way, way, way far off course, as you know. And we've got our work cut out for us to get that accomplished.
Well, we appreciate you being here tonight. And it's obvious you've done a lot of homework and you know how to move things forward. And Terry as well. Terry, did you have
my pleasure. Hey, it's
Bob.
Always my pleasure, Bob. I appreciate you including me in this, and it's always an honor to do anything with Roger. So thank you again for inviting me.
You bet, Kelvin.
And thanks, Terry, for
it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Terry, for everything you did for getting us to where we are, Terry. It's awesome. Thanks.
Okay. My honor.
Good night.
Good night.
Kelby?
Good night. Hang in there, Roger, just for a minute. Just a quick comment before we close out the call. For the last 7 years, I've been hearing about the common law grand jury, and it's the first time a gentleman has ever had the knowledge to explain it from inception to date. I think there is an incredible thing happening here, and basically we're talking oranges and oranges. What he is trying to do is affect republic order for the people. And what we are trying to do is obey the people's order as the republic. We're oranges and oranges. So I really, Roger, Terry, I really appreciate you guys coming on the call and sharing this wealth of knowledge. What I think that you have discussed tonight is probably the most important first step to enforcement of any kind that I have heard in great detail, and I want to congratulate you guys on effecting change in Dixie County. It's an incredible statement to hard work and to letting them know that you're a human being and showing them the law, and I understand what you guys probably had to do to make that happen. Whatever we can do to help you guys, let us know. We want to support your organization 100%. We believe what you guys are doing is incredible, and I appreciate you guys coming on the call. That is going to conclude our call for this evening. We are going to return next Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, as Bob so kindly reminded me. And this call is for the new people, so please, guys, don't forget to invite people to this call because they are going to hear about the things needed to restore this republic nation. And tonight we heard an incredible, incredible piece and component. God bless. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, cause there ain't no doubt.